Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. And Congress being in session is going to be a big thing soon.
Yeah. You know, Monday we have our second judicial committee inquiry. We had one this week, which was a bore. It was they had four constitutional scholars on,
right?
All from different, you know, well-respected law schools across the country. One from Stanford, one from North Carolina Chapel Hill, one from
Harvard,
sure. And then one from George. I want to say George Mason, maybe.
Oh, I think he's right. I think he's right, yeah.
But, and so the whole point of that was to have, you know, four people who study the Constitution kind of look at the entire situation with Trump and the Ukraine and then lay it out in a somewhat scholarly academic format, like their opinion of it. Was it necessary? No. Did it help anything? No. You know, I mean, it went down party lines.
Right. There were three Democrats and one Republican. Yeah,
which I really thought was a bad look on the Democrats' part. I mean, just go 2-2. Like, just some of the things that they do, it's just the optics.
Right.
Like, you are just constantly feeding to the rhetoric and the fodder that comes out from the Trump administration, from people like Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz,
Sean Hannity,
and all these people who are looking for who all they can do is harp about the process, right?
Right.
And I've said this a million times. This process, especially the congressional aspect of the inquiry, the investigation, the grand jury kind of proceeding of this. Listen, in the Constitution, the power is given to the majority leaders in Congress to set the rules and set the process. And there are no really other rules or guidelines as to how that's supposed to work. There are certain things that have been accepted as this is what we did this time around. So, and other people have said, all right, well, we'll do that. But that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be done every time. So in this phase of impeachment, the House that is the majority, or the majority, the party that's the majority in the House, like, they have control over this whole process. And, you know, a lot of people go to criminal justice, due process. And again, this is a political process, right? It is designed specifically to be a political process. This is different than the criminal justice system. This is different than the rules of civil procedure. It's its own special process within our Constitution for the government to have a control over the president when they believe that the president is acting, out of sorts,
right,
beyond the scope of his powers, what have you.
Derelict of duty or yes. abusing his power.
Yeah, and so everybody on the GOP, everybody on the right, and everybody who supports Trump, and all the Republicans are saying, well, this isn't fair, and due process, and this is a sham. Like, listen, that's the way it's set up. Those be the rules, right? The rules are the majority, the Democrats, they make the rules. It's not supposed to be fair. It wasn't designed to be fair, right? And if you want to liken it to the criminal justice system, this is a grand jury proceeding. Right? You ever been in a grand jury? You know what? During the grand jury, guess what?
The prosecution gets 100%
control. 100%, right? Like, the defendant doesn't get to present witnesses. The defendant doesn't get the ability to say, I don't want that guy to testify, or I want this guy to testify, or this is how I think the process should be. That's not how it works, right? This is them putting together their case to say, are we going to charge you, and what are we going to charge you with, right? Like, so if you get arrested, you don't get to go to the police and the prosecutor and say, don't talk to that guy. Don't bring this person up. Matter of fact, you want to talk to that guy? You can't. I'm telling you, you can't. That's not how this works, right? So that's one of the biggest frustrating parts when people talk to me, whether it's on Twitter or in person or on other formats, you know, talking about the fairness, talking about due process and all that. Due process doesn't apply. It just doesn't apply. I'm sorry. Now, once you get to the actual Senate trial,
right,
and they're trying to figure out if they're going to remove the president, what has been established is that in a removal, in the trial, in the Senate, then what has been accepted as an adopted rule is that your Fifth Amendment due process rights will apply to the president. Right, so that has been established. And the rules of evidentiary procedure, those things have been accepted into the way that a Senate trial for removal will work. So once you move into that phase, then things will be tightened up quite a bit. Chief Justice John Roberts will be, you know, kind of at the helm. And then you will have a specific, impeachment trial committee that will be headed by Democrats in Congress. And all the questions will have to be submitted beforehand. You will not have, you know, the Jim Jordans going out there and being able to rant, and, you know, Devin Nunes be able to go out there and, you know, spit these random theories about cows from the Ukraine and all this other shit, right? None of that stuff will be able to go on. It's a much tighter process. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of the people that are, you know, pro-Trump and Republican are saying, oh, well, once it gets there, and the Senate has, you know, they've got control, this is going to be most favorable to Trump, and then everybody's going to see. Well, the problem that you have is once this moves into the Senate, that the president's not going to be able to tell people, hey, don't testify, right? And, I mean, because then he's going to have a whole other set of issues on his hands that really then that becomes obstruction. And now, like Mitch McConnell and all them, they're going to be in a really tough position. And, you know, if you've got nothing to hide, why wouldn't you want, why wouldn't you want some of your people to come up there and talk, whether it's Mick Mulvaney or
John Bolton.
John Bolton is, I think, one of the big linchpins. I don't trust our Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. He's a CIA guy.
He's a career CIA guy.
I feel like he's gonna dance around a lot of things. But, you know, all of a sudden you're not going to be able to block guys like Bolton and Mulvaney and those people from speaking. And Republicans feel like, well, they're just going to protect Trump. I don't know. Because, you know, you're under oath.
Right.
Right. And you know, so can they plead the Fifth? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But those things don't bode well for Trump. And so this could get a little dicier for Trump once you get in a more formal setting and people are actually testifying. You're not going to be able to go off on these long sort of soliloquies, you know, just throwing out the random things that you think will kind of move the crowd in your favor.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I still don't think that the Senate's going to vote to impeach him.
To
remove him, right? Because, you know, we got to, like, words matter, especially right. In this instance, because there are two different things. But I don't think they're going to vote to remove him. But I do hold back. There is one caveat where if a Mulvaney and Bolton, if they come up, especially if Bolton comes up and says the wrong thing, if you're rooting for Trump, then you could have a problem, right? If Bolton comes out and says, look, this is what Trump told me. This is the text that I got. These are the emails that I have. And it was all, you know, it was bullshit from the beginning, right? And it becomes clear as day. Then you have a different issue, right? Like, now things become dicey for Trump. And what then happens is, then it's on the GOP. Then it's on your Republican senators to figure out, like, where do they put all this? Is this an absolute abuse of power? Is this something where Trump was trying to manipulate an election using a sovereign foreign entity, you know, to take down one of his political rivals? And then if that's the instance, do we remove him? And there are things that they're going to have to think about, like the overall political impact, right? The Trump supporters knowing, like, okay, yeah, they're 30% of the population, but they're an angry 30%, right?
Sure.
Like, so if you remove the president, what sort of impact does that have? Now, some people, you shouldn't consider that. Screw you. Yes, I should. You know, I mean, like, so there's a lot of things that'll go into this that we say, well, that shouldn't matter. It should only be by the book and blah, blah, blah. But, like, listen, there's no book. Right?
Where we are now.
There's no book for where we are right now. So a lot of things have to be taken into consideration. So it'll be really interesting to see if you do get that sort of bombshell moment in this trial aspect. Then, and it's in all of a sudden things become crystal clear. all these people that are defending Trump at every turn saying, oh, there's no clear evidence, there's no clear evidence, then what do they do? What do they fall back on?
I mean, I'm sure Alex Jones and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity will find a way to make it, you know, unfair and so-and-so is just disgruntled. But what does not get said enough, well, first of all, I want to just quote you time and time again. Every time the Democrats fuck up an election, what do you say?
Consequences.
Elections have consequences. Well, the Trump administration fucked around with enough stuff that they lost the House, and they're facing the consequences for that, plain and simple. The notion that impeaching the president is only going to make him more popular and stronger, I just don't buy that. Again, I don't think we're doing an apples-to-apples with him and Clinton. Clinton got impeached over lying about getting a blowjob. We all know this. Yeah, he lied about it. Had my favorite defense ever with the what is, definition of is. But at the end of the day, almost everyone said that was not worthy of our taxpayers' time and money. If you're giving this an honest, open look and saying, if what the Democrats are accusing him of, he actually did, that's a big fucking deal. I mean, CNN is saying it's worse than Watergate. I would say it's equivalent. I mean, it's tampering with an election using illegal means. Now, the fact that this involves a foreign government, yeah, you could argue it makes it worse. But my point is, it's in the same ballpark. Blowjobgate was not, in my opinion.
Right.
One other thing that I want to say, because I keep hearing people on the right say, Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine, says nothing was done wrong. So if he says nothing was done wrong...
But that's like that's the battered wife. That's right. Like, well, yeah. Or the dude held at gunpoint. Like, yeah, no, we're, it's right. All good here. Not a gun on my back at all. We're good.
Right. Right. I mean, if he bites Trump's hand after being quoted as saying he, quote unquote, loves Trump's ass. Was that Sondland who said that? Anyway. You know, that the fact that guy is not coming out and saying, yep, he's a crook and he held me hostage, is not evidence of anything.
Right. That doesn't help your argument. And that's...
But yet you hear it on Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity all the time.
Because they are going to cling to anything that they possibly can in terms of, you know, just rhetoric and, you know, trying to control the narrative. So, yeah, they're gonna say, well, Zelensky came out and said it. So clear, this is all a sham. What are we doing? Why are you wasting time? You know, I mean, and again, my opinion, is this worth disrupting everything and removing a president? Because here's the other part. As a Republican senator, you say, you know what? I am tired of Trump. I'm tired of being bullied by this guy. Screw him. Let's get him out and let's just get Pence in there. Right. And I think you and I both agree that Pence is maybe worse than Trump from a policy standpoint, but better in terms of rhetoric, maybe.
And stability.
Right? And stability. But the problem you have now is that the spin machine and the just flat out lie and make shit up, because at the end of ultimately no one's really vetting anything. And even if they do vet it, we'll just say that's not true either. Fake news.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? So my concern is, even, let's say they don't impeach Trump or let's say they impeach him but don't remove him.
Right.
And
which is by far the most likely.
Right. And then Trump, even if Trump does get beat, I think the issue is that there's no going back to normal. I think things were starting to unravel with Obama. There was so much anger by, you know, angry conservative whites that were pissed off that Obama got elected, whether it was based off of his policy or just race. And things began to unravel then. Now, it's not because of Obama. Like, Obama didn't do... Really,
Obama divided this country, Steve.
Well, right, but I mean, like the people, like they chose to be divided because
of Obama. Oh yeah, you know, but I'm being sarcastic. Yeah, no.
So I don't think that there really is a going back. And if you really look at it, I mean, we were like the whole Clinton impeachment was a fucking wild show. If you go back and look at some of the stories and some of the shit that popped out during that point in time, people quitting because they got busted in their own affairs. And, you know, how can you be... I think it was the Speaker of the House at the time who was...
Newt Gingrich.
No, it wasn't Newt Gingrich. I forget the guy's name, but he got found out. He had an affair and he had to step down. I can't remember if it was the Speaker of the House or
Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House and was having an affair.
So whoever the Senate Majority Leader was at the time, was a Republican, who got busted with an affair and had to step down. So... Like, I mean, it was like the Clinton impeachment and, you know, old Senate trial, like, that was a wild situation.
Right.
Right. I mean, and, it just, you know, time makes the heart grow fonder, but.
Well, and all of it revolved around a stained blue dress, which made it salacious as hell. I mean, I know you're no fan of Don Imus, but back in those days, he would do Imus in Crisis. We've now gone this many days without a love-ick stained dress. And it was just Imus in Crisis, day 7, no dress. You know, just, I thought it was hilarious. But at the end of the day, people didn't say, if this actually happened, it's a threat to our national security.
Oh, my God. Monica, why wouldn't you wash the dress?
Because she was holding on to it. Because her mom said that's the most expensive cum stain in history. I'm sorry, most important cum stain in history.
Oh, God.
I mean, you know what? And in her defense, and definitely looking back through the prism of history, good for her. She was called a liar. I mean, she was fooling around with a married guy. Maybe not classy, but it's the president. You're 24. I mean, I really can't blame a 24-year-old girl from being completely enamored with that situation.
No, I mean, that's all,
and Bill Clinton was smooth as hell.
It was all, that's all Clinton, right? Like, I mean, he was in a position of power. That's what makes it shitty, right? He's in a position of power. He's married. Not just any position of power. He is the president of the United States, right? And he could have had anyone he wanted, and he ends up with this intern, and she's only 24 years old. It's just like, Jesus, Bill, what are you doing?
Well, she was there.
Right, and she was, like, I get it. And in his book, he said he did it because he could, right? Yeah. He did it because he knew that he could, and he really didn't care. And, it, you know, I mean, like, we're getting a little off track, because that was just a really wild situation. And I've said this before, Monica Lewinsky has gotten better with age in terms of looks and overall everything. By the way,
she's frankly made a career out of public speaking,
she was put through the ringer.
Yeah,
right. She was the least guilty person of anything there. Like, okay, yeah, you were fooling around with a married guy, but that guy was the fucking president, and he was, you know, 20 years older than her. He had every ability to have that not happen.
Right.
You know,
he also had every ability to have that happen.
Right, and he did.
And he did.
Right, and shit got weird.
Yeah, and it did. Yeah, we could talk about that for hours, but let's not. So the president is at the NATO summit in London.
He's back.
Oh, he's back now. Okay.
He left early.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We didn't put that on the board. But he was there this week, and Justin Trudeau gets caught on a hot mic basically saying he was late for an event because Trump takes 40 minutes talking about himself before he can get anything accomplished, gets caught on a hot mic, and he made a few comments about the Trump's team's jaws dropping when he opened his mouth and just couldn't stop. Trump took offense to this and called Justin Trudeau two-faced and then said, but he's a really nice guy. He's been really nice to me, but he's two-faced.
Weird, by the way, what a weird comment. Like, I haven't heard anyone call two-faced since maybe I was, like, in high school.
Other than in Batman movies.
Right. I mean, which was, you know, Two-Face.
He literally had two faces.
Which is funny because there's a guy named Harvey Dent.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's Two-Face.
Right, but there's a guy named Harvey Dent who... Or no, his name's Charlie Dent. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Harvey Dent is the guy from Batman.
Right. So I've been thinking Charlie Dent was... I'm like, oh my God, it's a real-life Two-Face. Never mind. Anyway, sorry. Weird comic book nerd moment.
Donald Trump Jr. actually had a good line. He put out, Justin Trudeau is two-faced, and retweeted the blackface picture.
Mm.
It's actually kind of funny. So Don Jr., good for you. You're one for 748, but good for you. But this is kind of the fact that people are worried about will this harm the president's ego to the point where it causes a reaction is maybe a media overreaction, but that thought's in my head too.
It's not a media overreaction because Trump's ego, he needs to be praised. He needs the attention. He needs, you know, all eyes on him, all smiles, high fives, yes men, you know, pretty ladies telling him how big and strong and handsome he is and how he looks, he's more attractive than The Rock, you know, like all that sort of bullshit. So like, he needs that. He craves it. And, you know, he loves being in the position of president. Like, he gets, like, as much as he talks about fake news and how much he hates the media, he loves being in front of the media. He loves doing his rallies. You know, Justin Trudeau made that comment about the 40 minutes of Trump talking about Trump and his bullshit because that's what Trump does.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he loves to command the spotlight, right? Like, I mean, he's not wrong. It's a clear observation that anyone would tell you that's what Trump is about. Trump is about him, Right? He loves him some him.
And if you spent a day listening or dealing with that, and now you're out at a cocktail hour with other world leaders who've been in the same situation, right. And you, you know, the dropping the hot mic on him was kind of a shitty thing to do. It's fair.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a shitty thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But what's interesting is, you know, hot mics at NATO conferences didn't become a thing until Trump became president.
At NATO conferences, I agree. Right. I mean, Mitt Romney had that getting caught at the fundraiser and doing the 47%.
That's not NATO. That's not a collection of world leaders.
That's true.
You know, and one thing about this NATO conference, you know, Trump harps on, you know, getting other countries to pay their fair share and pay into NATO, and the U.S. is paying too much. And I just want to clear up one thing. And if you don't know, you know, NATO, short for North Atlantic, you know, Treaty Organization. Yep. So it was formed as an organization basically to kind of defend against the USSR and now Russia, right? And their aggression. So they formed this group, and it's all your, you know, Western European countries and
Australia. Not Australia.
No, they're not. It's the United States, it's Canada, it's
England, France, Germany.
Yes, all of them. And it's like basically everybody except Russia.
And the whole point of it is to prevent another massive war. So it was, we all get together and attack on one is an attack on all. So basically, if you're Russia, you can invade Crimea because they're not part of NATO, but you cannot invade Poland.
Right, and because Poland is a part of NATO, and if you do, then we're you're all coming all at you full force. And, you know, the interesting thing about it now is that because you have some of these different leaders that are in these different countries, like the whole like position of NATO is a little bit unstable, right? And Trump doesn't help this at all. But now, you know, you've got, you know, Turkey is a part of NATO, but, you know, Erdogan is
doing his own thing.
Right, doing his own thing and you know, getting weapons from Russia and weapon systems that, you know, can hurt other NATO countries and their systems and things like that. So, you know, like NATO had some of its own issues, but Trump talks a lot about these countries paying their fair share in terms of defense spending. Now, in the NATO agreement, you know, each country is supposed to pay 2% of their GDP in order to, you know, keep their defenses at a level that can, you know, if they need to go, you know, on the you know, they need to go quickly, then they can and they can be effective, right? Like that's the whole kind of point of it. But right now in a time of peace, you know, some of these countries like Germany's not overly worried about building up their defenses, right?
Right.
And Germany has a rough history when they build up their defenses, shit happens. So some of these countries aren't as focused on it and they're putting their money in other things like, you know, climate change and, you know, building up their economies and, you know, job opportunities and healthcare, things like that. So they're spending their money on other things and it's not an idea where everyone is paying all this money into a pool and they have this special like NATO unit, right? No, it's not how it works. Like, right, each country individually spends money on their own defense, right, to make sure that they are ready and on the ready. And the U.S. chooses to spend the money that they spend. I think the United States spends like 4% of our GDP.
Oh, I think it's more than that. I think it's like 16.
No, I don't think it's that high.
Okay.
I think the problem is our GDP is really high.
Right.
And so us spending twice as much as everybody else is like a, you know, like, we're spending 2 percentage points more, but our GDP is so much higher. So the actual amount of money that we're spending is crazy more than anybody else.
Last I looked, we spend more than the next 7 countries combined. That number used to be like 19, but other countries have started spending more.
Right.
So we spend more than the next 7 countries combined.
Yes.
And I mean, I don't have the list in front of me. Russia is obviously in that mix, but other than Russia and China, the other ones are allies.
Yes.
So,
I mean, like, so we spend a ton of money. So Trump's just like, well, we're spending all this money. You need to bring it up. Like, we don't have to spend nearly as much money as we do on our defense.
Right.
But we do. And so, and listen, it keeps us safe and it seems to be working to a degree. But, you know, these other countries are now they are spending more and you know, it's in, you know, Trump says it's all because of him, but I think there's some other things that are causing these countries to spend more. It's not necessarily Trump. I mean, you have Iran that is becoming more and more aggressive. You have literally, you have Iran, you have Syria, you have, you know, the instability in Turkey because of Erdogan, and then you have aggression coming from Putin as he tries to, you know, influence the Middle East, not to mention what China is doing, and kind of coming up through the back end through Africa. So there's a reason why these countries are spending more on their defense, because there are legitimate concerns about something happening. Now it's not just Russia, you have these other concerns. So it makes sense that they would start to spend more money now as things seem to get a little bit more hairy as we get into
them. Right, or less stable. Again, we could ramble on about this for hours, but there's a story I'm dying to talk about.
All right, cool.
Cenk Yunger from the Young Turks, or Unger, anyway. Cenk is running for Congress, I believe it's the 25th District in California, Katie Hill's seat.
Yeah, Katie Hill, she had the thruple. She was married to the guy, but then she like had a lesbian relationship with her staffer, and then it went sour, and we talked about it. Then the husband did the ultimate bitch move and basically outed her and put her new photos online and Reddit and all this other stuff. So that Katie Hill.
Yep. And so Cenk was on with Chris Cuomo on CNN the other day, and they had a really interesting exchange, because Chris Cuomo brought up a lot of the stuff that Cenk Yunger has gotten shit for, most of which is more than 15 years old from when he was actually a Republican. And, he tweeted, or blogged, sorry, it was pre-Twitter. He blogged some misogynistic stuff. And I've had mixed feelings about him, but for the most part, I like him. And what I really liked about this interview the other day was he owned all of it. He said, yeah, I did that. I did that 18 years ago. It was wrong. I erased it 15 years ago. It's getting brought up now. And then he said something that I wish more of these folks would say. And the reason they're doing that is they don't want to talk to me about issues. They want to talk about 15-year-old missteps. And thank you. Because if Bill Clinton, when asked about the Monica Lewinsky blowjob, to go back to that, if he was asked, is there a sexual relationship with you and Monica Lewinsky, if he would have said, did you really bring me here to talk about my sex life? I really don't think that's congressional business. I'm not answering questions about that because I'd be setting a bad precedent. Let's talk about the bullshit you tried to get me on that you didn't. If he did that, yeah, people would say, oh, I'll bet he's having an affair. And he was.
Right.
But it goes away. Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he got accused of pinching asses on movie sets and all that stuff, he essentially admitted he did.
Yeah.
He said, look, where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't really want to get into details on this, but if I hurt anybody, I'm sorry. I'm moving on. Not the greatest apology, but it ended right there. But when these guys tap dance and do this bullshit...
Remember what I said about Kavanaugh? What did I say?
I know what I said about Kavanaugh.
Yeah, I remember what you said. But remember what I said about Kavanaugh? If Kavanaugh would have just... And we're talking about the Supreme Court Justice.
Right.
Justice Kavanaugh, if he would have said, listen, it was... 1983,
I was 17.
Right, it was 30 years ago. I was in high school. We drank a lot of beer. I like beer.
If you would have handled it your way instead of, I like beer, right. And squeegee and snooky and Toto.
Yes, exactly. But if you would have said, listen, it was you know, 30 years ago, and yeah, we were drinking, and if I did that, I don't remember that happening. If I did, I'm really sorry. Sounds like it's, you know, like that. If it sounds like it's caused you a great deal of pain, again... Drunk's not an excuse, but that's really acceptable behavior. Then that goes away. You don't have a fucking, you know, Senate, FBI investigations and all that other stuff. We don't have that fucking terrible press conference that brought us a great SNL skit.
It did bring us a great
But, you know, and remember, Mike Wood jumped all over me. He was like, that's a cuck thing to do and blah, blah, blah. It's caving to the establishment. Like, no, it's not caving. Like, it's just like, all right, listen. Maybe he does, and maybe he legitimately doesn't remember it. Like, I mean, if you're plastered, then maybe he probably doesn't remember it, right? But
I guarantee you, I did stuff in high school that if you reminded me of it, I'd go, ooh, that's not good. And I didn't drink in high school.
Right. I mean, like, I didn't, and I remember enough. But I mean, I think the whole point is you're right, right? You're right. Like you own it, and you say that was then. I apologize. You've had multiple decades since that has happened.
Right.
And so now we're here to talk about the here and now, and you've got everything I've done from that moment forward to now, or you can go from now back the last 10 years that counters that. So, you know, my pattern of behavior has been good since. So let's focus on the issues now. You're exactly right. And it's interesting that he's doing it. I don't know. This is an interesting seat because, again, Katie Hill won it. So a guy like Unger with a following, he possibly
he's could. Not from that area, and they're saying that might come back to hurt him.
It could.
It could.
But
being on TV helps a lot.
You've had good candidates who weren't from areas sure. where it's
Hillary hurt Clinton them. Won a New York State Senate seat, and she was...
Right. I mean, like, I think she's maybe... I think she was originally from New York, but...
No, I think she's originally from Massachusetts.
Or so. Yeah,
but
I don't...
But anyway, she moved to New York to become a senator from New York.
Right. I mean, Mitt Romney. You know, governor of Massachusetts and...
His family is from Utah, I think, or he's Mormon.
Exactly.
He's Mormon.
But, I mean, we'll see what happens with Unger, but, I mean, I think your analysis of how he handles his past is perfect, but what's really interesting is that for that same seat, George Papadopoulos, who is the root cause of the whole Russia investigation and the investigation into the, you know, Trump... The Trump administration or the Trump campaign,
right.
It was George Papadopoulos and Carter Page. Those are the two people who were really kind of the central focus of, are there Russian operatives working in the Trump campaign, right? Because George Papadopoulos, you know, is running his mouth about, you know, a foreign entity having, you know,
right.
emails from the DNC and dirt on Hillary. You know, Carter Page, same thing. He was running around telling people that he had inside information about all this stuff that's going to come out and, you know, dealings. And he was going to meet people in Russia and Greece and all this other stuff. So those two people were really integral into this whole Trump thing. Now, George Papadopoulos got hit up because he, you know, he lied and he's got a felony.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so this dude is running, like you were found guilty of lying to the FBI and I think something else, and you are now trying to run for Congress.
Right.
Right? Like, I mean, you have no experience in, you know, Trump, which now we know this is what he does. Like, if you're in trouble and you know Trump, Trump says, oh, I don't know him that well. Like, I mean, everybody's waiting for him to say, yeah, I don't know Rudy Giuliani that well. So he was the mayor of New York or whatever. I never really talked to him that much because it seems like, you know, the pressure's coming down on Rudy Giuliani. But the point is, George Papadopoulos is essentially a political nobody who got himself in trouble to the point where he got himself a felony. And now he is trying to run again. He's trying to run for a congressional seat in California, which I think is hilarious. But if you look at his Twitter feed, he is just saying, well, I'm just going to do what Trump does. Right. And I'm just going to completely ignore my own personal transgressions and anything that people throw out about me. I'm going to either call it fake news or point to how, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, blah, blah, blah. Like, those, you know, all the cues that they're all taking from the guy at the top. And he thinks that that is going to push him into a congressional seat in California.
We'll see. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's highly unlikely.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know who else is in that race, but I like Cenk Younger's odds against George Papadopoulos. Yeah. I do. Vote for me. I'm not a felon.
Right. Literally. I mean, that's not a hard campaign.
So anyway, we talked a little bit of Clinton stuff earlier, and now there's actually some modern day Clinton stuff to talk about because Hillary decided to act like a human again. She wrote a book with her daughter, and now she's been doing the you know, media tour, so to speak. And she went on Howard Stern, which I did not hear, but I heard people talk about, and I know that's dangerous.
So I went back and listened to it, and let me tell you, Hillary did in this interview what she should have done back in 2015, 2016. And she even admitted as such. Howard Stern wanted her to come on the show back when she was campaigning, and he told her, he's like, listen, I had Donald Trump on my show, and he's like, that was a big boost for Donald Trump. Donald Trump did all the media. He went on everything. He went on Breitbart. He went on Howard Stern. He went on Saturday Night Live twice during the campaign. Like, I mean, he was everywhere. You could, like,
That was Alec Baldwin. I hate to break it to you.
No.
I know, I'm joking. I'm joking. Sorry.
So, Hillary didn't do any of that. And in this interview, she said, listen, it never got to me that you wanted me to be on the show. But chances are the reason why it never got to me is because they knew I wouldn't have done it. She said, I didn't do any of the media things that Donald Trump was doing. And She said, I didn't interact with the media the way I was supposed to. And that is something that hurt me. Right. I mean, and she openly admitted it in the part that this was a side of Hillary that I have never seen. It was very human. It was very honest. It was very open. It was that side of Hillary that people in her campaign were telling us that existed that no one saw, that no one knew existed. And it was just, I'm the nasty woman and I'm calling people deplorables and, you know, vote for me, right, because I'm Hillary
it's my birthright and all that stuff.
Yeah. So she did that. But she acknowledged basically all the criticisms that, I've given, and, not so much yours because you just didn't like her because...
Actually, it is kind of mine because I don't like her because I consider her to be completely disingenuous.
Which I think is an unfair criticism because I think, do you think...
other politicians are genuine?
Right. I mean...
I've gone through this. There were multiple things I don't like about her, many of them relating to her sense of entitlement and... the notion that, it was her turn and it was owed to her, and the fact that I just did not believe a word she said. When she said, I went onto Wall Street and read them the Riot Act. I'm like, okay, show us the transcripts. Well, no.
Okay,
and you didn't get paid $250,000 for a 30-minute speech to tell them you're going to kick their ass.
But there's a lot of people who hated Obama said the same thing, right? That he was disingenuous and all these sort of things. And what do we say about those people? Are you sure it was that? Or is it just because he was black?
Well, all right, if you're saying I didn't like Hillary because she's a woman, I will strenuously object.
Okay, you can strenuously object, but that doesn't really get you anywhere. You have just earned yourself a Colonel Jessup for that one. but you don't know when it's coming. You could see where people can make the connection, right? I mean, like you're saying, she was disingenuous. Like most politicians are fucking disingenuous.
True.
Right? I think Bernie Sanders is one of the most fucking disingenuous people on the fucking campaign.
Oh, I disagree.
The fuck that dude, man. Like, I mean, listen, like you, like a lot of things, like people don't remember. Like, do you remember when Bernie's campaign first started and the people from the Black Lives Matter thing took over his thing and he ran away and went upstairs and locked himself in a fucking room?
I do.
Right? And this is the same guy that, I've been fighting for fucking civil rights since Martin Luther King. Like, you may or may not have been in one march with Martin Luther King one time, a thousand people removed, but okay, you're the dude from Vermont fighting for black people. Okay.
Both of them. He's fighting for both of them.
For Nasty Nate and his dad. Okay. The fuck out of here.
Okay. Nasty Nate was a teammate of Steve's.
Roommate
of Steve's in college, and the Colonel Jessup thing is a personal joke between us where he will send me "you can't handle the truth" texts at 2 in the morning, so I wake up to them, or randomly in conversation to try to sneak them in. But just to explain to people who don't know what earning a Colonel Jessup is.
But, I mean, I guess my point is that I think a lot of times women candidates, and we saw this with Kamala Harris, I was a big fan of Kamala Harris.
She dropped out, I know.
Which is not on the board, but amazing. Kamala Harris did drop out of the campaign. One of her issues was money, and her campaign was poorly managed, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that we didn't know what her message was, right? It wasn't always clear. She didn't always perform great in the debates. She had a couple really bright moments, but then she had a lot of dull moments. I never held against her prosecutorial record, which a lot of black people did. I thought her being a prosecutor was critical. I thought that was key because she has the mind to go against someone like Trump and really attack him on facts and be able to put the pressure on him and flummox him. But she herself, in some of these debates, like she allowed like a Tulsi Gabbard to go in and attack her, and then she didn't really have a good defense, and she looked terrible in doing so. I still thought she was a viable candidate, but I thought she just needed to be stronger than what she was showing. She kind of just got caught in this weird space that I think that only really a woman of color, a strong black woman like herself she was in a unique position because there was no one else like her in the race. And she was facing things that the rest of the candidates weren't facing, not even the other female candidates, because they were all white, right? Like, so, she was fighting
multiple... I think technically Tulsi is Pacific Islander.
Okay, yes. And yes, so she is Pacific Islander, but no one's looking at her like, you know.
Right.
Again.
Sorry.
Again, I go back to the slavery test. Like, listen, if they reinstated slavery under the same rules as applied back in the 1800s, would this person be a slave? Yes or no? Tulsi Gabbard? No. Kamala Harris? Yes. Elizabeth Warren? Right. No.
Yeah, know, and
The Rock? Probably no, just because he was just bigger and better than everybody else.
Did your phones just go weird?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. We're going to fix something here. All right, so technical, to you, that was nothing.
Technical difficulties.
We did have some technical difficulties. We've resolved them. And,
but anyway, like I was saying, but Kamala Harris is still facing a different sort of... her entire campaign was just different than, you know, the other women that she's facing, even different than Cory Booker, because, you know, being a woman, like, they brought up, oh, well, you slept with Willie Brown back in the early 90s, so you slept your way to the top. Like, again, she was a consenting adult that slept with a guy. Okay, like, yeah, he was in a position of power, but that doesn't necessarily mean she slept her way to the top. And Willie Brown was out long before she made her full ascension to, you know, prosecutor and attorney general. So those are things that other people didn't have to deal with. It was frustrating to see kind of her, like, kind of rise and then fall. You know, I was really disappointed because she was, like, I mean, it's on this show, like, she was my candidate.
Yep.
And I've taken some heat for it on Twitter because, you know, I criticized her, which is where we're at right now in 2019, going into 2020. If you criticize a candidate, that candidate's faithful Twitter mob will come after you with all the fury and rage of hell, right? I mean, it's just like, they're like, so we just can't criticize these people? They're completely above reproach?
You know,
like, I can't point out, like, hey, if she did this better, then more, she would be, you know, more people would be receptive to her. Like, I mean, it's crazy the environment we're in when it comes to criticizing these people. But, again, she was just up against things that a lot of these candidates weren't up against, and it's really disappointing how it's kind of played out for her.
And I think the fact of having, you know, 10 people on stage hurt her a lot. I mean, a mainstreamer.
Right. It hurt, if you weren't Biden, if you weren't Warren, and if you weren't Bernie Sanders, it hurt. And Bernie Sanders hasn't been good in these debates, by the way. Right? Like, I mean, he's not really getting a lot in. He's, you know, he's going to his normal talking points, which is good, right? Like, I mean, he's, you know, saying
consistent. He's consistent.
But he's not saying anything outside of the same things he was saying, you know, back in 2016 with that same, you know, old man, get off my lawn, do it, and if you don't do it, then you're a racist, capitalist asshole, and you're the problem.
You know, with the last debate, I was paying a lot of attention. Pretty much everyone was constantly putting their hands in the air because they just want a minute to talk. And the moderator steered things towards Biden, Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg.
Yeah.
You know, Kamala Harris got the spotlight when she was the first one to really go after Joe Biden. And, you know, Joe Biden wanted to go there. I'm good old Uncle Joe. And remember what a nice guy I am. And
can we talk about his de-evolution? I mean, that guy cannot be the president.
Did you see his meltdown at the town hall?
Yes.
I kind of like that. I like two things about it. I like the fact that the guy came at him and he shot back and called the guy. Okay. And the fact that he didn't cut off the guy's mic. They tried to take the mic from the guy, and Joe Biden said, let him keep it. Okay. I like those two things.
That's fine. But, that doesn't bother me. The whole story about the kid touching his legs in the pool and...
What?
How could you have not heard this story, Jim? Jesus Christ. So, Joe Biden is telling this story about how, like... The black kids at the swimming pool had never seen a white person before, so they would come up and, like, sit on his lap and touch his legs, and the hair would rise on his legs, and they would, like, touch it, and he would, like, oh, let them do it, because it was, like, their first experience with a white person, and he loves little kids sitting on his lap, like...
Okay, Mr. Sandusky, is there anything you'd like to add?
Exactly. I mean, just bizarre shit that you just should not be saying.
Okay,
I did not. The weird thing where he was like trying to bite his wife's hand on stage, like she was talking and waving her hand, and he like bent forward and like nipped at it.
That's weird and funny because it doesn't involve kids.
I guess
kids.
I can't have him as president of the United States. I just can't. I'm sorry.
I've been delinquent in writing my article about Joe Biden needs to shut the fuck up and go away. Joe Biden being an establishment, long-term white guy made him very valuable to the Obama campaign, and it's exactly what we don't need now in terms of popularity.
Fine. I also don't think we needed him for the Obama campaign.
I know. But you can't argue that he wasn't a good choice in the sense that he won two elections handily with him as a running mate.
Fine.
I mean, that's results, right?
I can't disprove something that didn't happen. So okay,
right, fine. Right.
I just think that's that
not,
you could have.
Let's not re-choose Obama's running mate in 2008.
Would have picked any number of people that he would have been just fine.
All right. I want to talk sports, but you brought a story to my attention that I want to learn about because I really don't know about it. Michael Vick was named an honorary captain for the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, so he's named an honorary captain for the Pro Bowl. So if you don't know Mike Vick's story, he was, amazing college talent, a quarterback at Virginia Tech. We played at the same time, actually. There was a slight chance that I could have played with him if I decided I wanted to go to Virginia Tech, which I did not. But we leave the same time. He has a great career in college, goes to the Atlanta Falcons, has a really promising career, but ends up going down in a dogfighting ring scandal.
Federal corruption.
Right. There could have been RICO charges. There was all sorts of stuff. And so he had this dogfighting ring, horrific stories, fighting dogs and then, killing the losers. And, it was really bad. And he ends up going to prison for 2 years for this, serves his 2 years in Leavenworth, comes back. He also went bankrupt, but he paid back every one of his debtors, every one of them, in full. And then once he does that, then he comes back into the NFL and, kind of reignites his career briefly with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then kind of fades out. He actually played with the Steelers for a year and ended his career with the Jets, and then he retires. Part of when he came back was he needed to rehabilitate his image. So he worked with some animal nonprofits and talked about why dogfighting is bad and did that whole thing. So now the NFL is, they kind of brought him back because he was really a transcendent player in the league. And people are really upset. Your animal lovers are really upset. But what's interesting is the hate and anger about Michael Vick is there's a clear line who's mad and who's not about this. I would say a majority of the people who are pissed about this are white women.
Okay.
White women, beyond a doubt. And then, white dudes that need the attention of white women are like, yeah, I'm so pissed about this too. What is this about?
Right.
I'm outraged. I would never drown a cat.
I will protest with you.
That guy. And then you have your people who truly love dogs and just are more appalled about a dog being killed than a kid being shot dead in the street by a cop, but we don't even have to go there. And so I just think it's really interesting about the dynamic of who is pissed about Michael Vick and who is not. And I'm not going to say all because, again, not all people are a monolith, not all black people, not all white people, not all white women are a monolith, right? There are some white women who really don't give a shit, but there are a ton, right? Between, Facebook and Twitter, I've seen thousands of tweets and messages and things like that are just completely beside themselves. Think about what he did to those dogs. How could you even put this guy out there? And he should never be allowed to make money again. And why is this a thing? People should be outraged. And then all the guys with hero complexes come in. If I see him on the street, I'm going to do to him what he did to those dogs. Okay, sure. give it a go, buddy. But if you look at it, most black people are like, all right, he served his time. He literally repaid his debt. I'm over it.
So I will be fully honest. When that whole story broke, I didn't like Michael Vick in college because he beat my team. I marveled at him as a player, but I was like, yeah, and we got to play him every year, and we're not going to a big bowl game because of him.
It wasn't.
But you hated going against him because he was
dynamo. Yeah, because you couldn't stop him in college.
Right. I didn't like him as a sports fan, but I marveled at watching him when he played Florida State in the national championship game. I was cheering for him in that game because I hate Florida State more, and he did things in that game that were just ridiculous. It was a one-man show.
If their defense was a little bit better, then they went in the
national championship. Yeah, and one play stands out in particular. He threw a sideline pass. And, like, the cornerback from Florida State is baiting him. Like, right. Go ahead and try to throw it. I'm going pick six, bitch. And he rocketed it right past him.
It was
him.
A laser.
And me and my friend watching the image went, that
it
was
should
amazing.
Have been, it should have been an interception.
It should have been.
I remember the play as clear as day, right? I mean, he just rocketed it. And it stands out because Michael Vick is left-handed, right?
That's right.
And so
thrown to that side of the field.
Right. And that ball coming off his hand, like most quarterbacks, like that would have been an awkward throw. But for him being left-handed, it was perfectly natural. And then he lasers it in. And the corner from Florida State was funny.
That you and I did not know each other for 10 years later, and we still remember that play.
I remember the corner from Florida State being completely flummoxed as to, like,
what just happened?
How? What?
I tried to get you to do that. I did, and that guy has the ball.
That's when Florida State was really good, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, kids out there.
Right, like, if you're Florida a young kid following it now, really and like you're just like, Florida State's
what are you talking about?
Right, like, no, Florida State used to be one of the best teams in the country.
Perennial national championships.
But it's just interesting to look at the dynamic in terms of who has forgiven Michael Vick and who will never forgive Michael Vick. And I think there's an interesting thing about black culture in general is that we are a very forgiving people, right? Like, yes, we harbor a lot of anger and we hold on to some of the really nasty shit that's happened to us in the past, whether it's personally or as a people in general, culturally, but we are very forgiving. A lot of that stems from religion, and there's a long road to go down there. But essentially, like, when you've seen so many black men that have been, you know, just kind of taken and made an example of, whether it's the local PD or Chicago PD or Baltimore or Cleveland or whatever, you know, we're going to take this guy and we're going to drag him through the town square and we're going to string him up. Right, like literally and figuratively, in our criminal justice system, we are much more willing to forgive a black man, whether he was a superstar or some guy off the street who did something terrible, but has made a concerted effort to redeem himself. Right, like we're not going to hold it against you because we've seen too many people who look like us, who once they go down that road of being sucked into the criminal justice system, they never make it back. Right, they either fall
into
a life.
And the system is designed to not make it easy for them.
Right,
to do
I mean,
that.
They either fall into a life of crime, or they end up dead, or they're just never right again. Right,
can't get a good job because they got that on the record, and so
when
it just
see a
feeds
guy,
himself.
When we see a guy like Michael Vick who goes through this thing, and my issue with Michael Vick early on, and a lot of my issues with a lot of black athletes is, you cannot put yourself in these situations. You have too many examples. Right, like any athlete that I believe that, you know, came out of college after 2004, 2005, by then we had so many examples of guys who had fucked up because of drugs, because of women, because of, you know, the wrong crowd,
bad financial decisions,
guns and that, all that. We had so many examples. There's no reason any black athlete should come out and fall into those same traps, right? Because so many people before them made the mistakes, and then people after them learned from them and had put in safeguards, whether it's in on the college level and even on the pro level, right? That's kind of one of the good things about the NCAA is some of the things that they put in is kind of to prevent some of that shit that was going on in the 80s and 90s that really sucked some of these kids in when it came to gambling and throwing games and, you know, getting sucked in with mobsters and all that other shit. So, you know, when you see a guy like Michael Vick and you're a black person, you're just like, the redemption aspect has a great deal of value to us as a people, right? Because we've seen too many people who this has happened to on a smaller scale, who they want to do the right thing, they want to be better, but they don't have the means, the resources, or the support to get back on their feet. And we see them sucked down and you say, I wonder what could have been. Right, and we can't change the mistake that they made, but we can't continue to bury a person for that mistake, fuck up thing that they did, no matter how fucked up it was. So we see a guy like a Michael Vick, and we're like, all right, listen, motherfucker went to jail, he paid off all his debts, he's done all the things that you wanted him to do in terms of working with these nonprofit groups, which you know that they hate him, right? You know that they hate him, and they want to see him fail. But he's managed to be able to work with them and establish a relationship to now where they trust him and they actually support him. So why the fuck am I going to still beat this guy up over something that happened? And listen, for every single person that wants to go out and I'm going to do to Michael Vick what he did to those dogs, you don't have anywhere near the same passion for a kid that was walking down the street who had some mental health issues in Laquan McDonald and a cop put 16 fucking bullet holes in him.
And So to finish my thoughts on Michael Vick, I was a hater after the conviction for dogfighting, which I had had a huge issue with. I had read articles in an Indianapolis independent paper about busting a dogfighting ring, and I'm not Mr. Animal Lover guy. I mean, I like dogs, but I'm not like passionate.
You're a hunter.
I'm a hunter. Yeah, exactly. I spend time and money and energy to put arrows into animals. Yeah, but dogs are different. I mean, I wouldn't shoot a dog with a bow. Okay. Fuck deer. But I'm a hunter. Right, exactly. I'm not Mr. Animal Lover guy. I hated Michael Vick after that because I'd read about dogfighting and it was revolting, and not just the dogfighting itself, but, you know, stealing family pets to use as training dummies just grossed me out.
Yeah.
So I was at the forefront of the, you know, torch and pitchfork crowd when Michael Vick went down. And I have forgiven's the wrong word. It's not for me to forgive. But he's paid his debt. Dude went to, you said he went to jail.
He went to Leavenworth.
Fort fucking Leavenworth. I would last 30 seconds in Fort fucking Leavenworth. 30 seconds.
This is such a hysterical thought, you in prison.
No, it's really not. I wake up in a cold sweat from that sometimes. Mostly in dreams involve me hanging out with you earlier in the night. All right, I made that part up, but it's not completely unbelievable. My outrage is, I have no outrage towards Michael Vick anymore. I do think he paid his debt. He did exactly what you would ask. He had a much greater opportunity because he was so physically talented. But he got his shit together, played ball, had a second career that was still pretty damn impressive.
Yes.
And, you know, I agree. That is settled history to me. And it can be an example of how you can fuck up even though there's no way you should have, and how you can redeem yourself. So he's kind of a redemption story. No, he's a redemption story.
He is, by definition, a redemption. Right. And you know, he's done multiple interviews where he said, listen, he said a number of things, especially lately. He said, I was a punk. You know, he's like, and what's amazing is Michael Vick's numbers are kind of crazy, right? He had, you know, his rushing numbers and all that other stuff. I mean, because he was so fast and he was so athletic and everything else. But what really kind of blows your mind is, like, so Michael Vick was doing all this, getting his team to the playoffs. They beat Green Bay at Green Bay. He beat Brett Favre in Green Bay. In a playoff game, like, in shitty weather. And, I mean, these are things that, didn't happen.
Right.
And he had this interview where he's talking to his old coach, Jim Mora Jr. And Jim Mora is just like, hey, man, like, I would put these DVDs, I give you these DVDs and, you know, of offense, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And, you know, to take home and watch. And Michael Vick's just like, yeah, they stayed in my truck. I never watched a single DVD. I didn't watch. He said, the only film I watched.
Did they give him a blank tape once and say,
that was DeMarcus Russell.
Okay.
Sorry. That was DeMarcus Russell. They would give him blank DVDs. And then they would ask him if he watched them. He'd be like, yeah, I watched them. I watched all, great, right? You know, okay. 3 hours. All right. But no, with Michael Vick, they, you know, like Jim Moore was like, yeah, I give you, did you watch any of them? He's like, no, I never watched any of them. So this guy wasn't watching film. He wasn't studying. And everything we know about quarterbacks, right? The Peyton Mannings.
Tom Brady. The
Tom Brady. Like, they're meticulous, you know, film watchers. And they build these, you know, home theater systems in their basement designed specifically for watching film of games. Like, if they're not right. at practice and they're not spending time with their families and being the perfect family, then all they do is watch film, right? That's what all these guys do. Derek Carr, Matt Ryan, and you know, it's just like, clearly those two aren't doing enough because they both fucking suck. But that's FanDuel angst coming out. But the point is, he wasn't doing any of that, and he was still putting up these crazy fucking numbers. But he openly admitted, like, listen, I was more worried about, you know, street cred and partying and having a good time, you know, drinking, smoking, all the shit.
Getting laid, I'm sure.
Like, you're right. I mean, like, getting laid. I mean, like, he gave a girl an STD. He had a fake name that he was going by. He was smoking weed and all this other shit.
He had a great fake name, though. Wasn't Ron Mexico? Wasn't that him? I love that so much.
I was like, why? But, I mean, like, so he had all this shit going on, and he was still putting up these crazy fucking numbers. Then it all comes fucking crashing down, and he could have gave up. He could have said, fuck it, but whatever. He realized, like, listen, I want to redeem my career. I want to, you know, like, yes, he needed the money because he had all these fucking crazy debts, but he did love the game of football, and he learned to become a student of the game. Now, at that point in time, you know, he wasn't as athletic, but I still think Michael Vick at 80% is still more athletic than 100% of the quarterbacks in the league at the time. And so he did have a kind of a short-lived career revival, and it is a redemption story to the degree that you've not heard a single thing about Michael Vick in terms of trouble or anything like that afterwards. And he has been an ambassador for the game. He's been an ambassador for a role model for these young guys coming in, saying, like, you cannot have these people around you that are driving you the wrong direction. You cannot get involved in these things. You can't get sucked up into these street hustles. You can't be worried about street cred and being a gangster and all this other shit. Like, you need to focus on your career, focus on your family, and figure out what your out is after.
Right.
Which is critical.
Right. And, I'm not saying I applaud the NFL, but I have no problem with what they did.
I don't have a problem with it. I just think it's interesting to see the dynamic of the people that are who don't care about any of that. And now, just like, it's all about the dogs.
Right.
And to those same people, I'm just like, if you gave a fuck about some of the other shit, about the shit that happens to people, right? As much as you care about the fucking dogs, then who knows where we would be. But,
all right. Anyway. So, yeah, we got to move on because I've heard two people say that Lamar Jackson is turning into what Michael Vick should have been.
Yes.
Those two people are you. And Michael Vick.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Lamar Jackson, and this is where Lamar Jackson is different. Lamar Jackson last year, the knock against him was that he couldn't throw the ball.
Right.
He wasn't very accurate, and he wasn't. He wasn't very accurate. Like, he throws a pretty deep ball. His deep ball is very pretty. Yeah. Right. He doesn't have the same arm that Michael Vick had, because Michael Vick's arm
is not many people
fucking
do.
Ridiculous.
Right.
But he still has a fucking crazy arm, and so. The thing with Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson does study. He does try. He does know what he needs to do to get better in the game, and you're seeing him evolve into a better player. And people are like, well, he only threw for 165 yards. Well, the game he only threw for 165 yards, the quarterback he was going up against, and I'm talking about when he played against...
Against the Rams. Yeah.
He only threw for 165 yards. He ran for 90, and he threw 5 touchdowns.
Right.
Right, I mean, like right. he threw five touchdowns.
He was removed from the game
in the fourth quarter.
In the third quarter. Well, beginning of the fourth quarter. So essentially, the entire fourth quarter in the NFL that almost never happens.
Right, that only happens in high school and college.
So out of reach.
Right, but Baltimore played San Francisco just this past week.
Right,
it was rainy, it was wet, whatever, and they're just like, see, Lamar only threw for 105 yards and a touchdown, and he ran for another one. If you take away his legs. Then he's no good. I'm like, well, Jimmy Garoppolo, who was a San Francisco 49ers quarterback, he only threw for 145 yards and one touchdown and one interception. Like, neither one of them threw for 200 yards, but Lamar ran for 100 yards, where Jimmy Garoppolo, like, was negative in terms of yardage on the ground. Like, do his legs help? Absolutely. But here's the deal. Dude's not throwing interceptions. He's not, you know what I mean? Like, right. I mean, he's making good decisions with the ball. He's putting receivers in a position where they can catch the ball and do something with it after, right? Like, he's not just throwing balls where guys have to make these crazy catches and then they get tackled on the spot. Like, they're catching the ball and they're able to run, or he's throwing them open in the end zone and he's throwing fucking darts and lasers.
And so he's been on fire. And to deny that is just because you want to. The fact that he has the weapon of taking off and running also impacts him as a passer because teams have to defend him differently. You can't just leave a safety over the middle because you leave that open space in the middle. He'll find a gap, and there's 20 yards. He's smart running with the ball in terms of he doesn't expose himself to big hits. So a lot of people who are criticizing him saying he's really successful in the run-pass option, which, again, they're saying that, well, they just cater to the offense to fit his skills.
Yeah,
that's what good coaches do.
Yeah, that's what good coaches do.
I mean, if you have Tom Brady and you try to make a run-pass option quarterback, he would suck.
Right, he would suck and you would fail and you would be fired.
And you should be.
Right, before the end of the season.
So they've used his talents intelligently. I do want to talk briefly about what Tim Ryan said. So Tim Ryan is he's a radio host in San Francisco.
He used to be a quarterback.
Quarterback? It was defensive back was what I had in my head. But anyway, he played for the Bears at some point, I guess.
I think he played for the 49ers at some point.
Probably. That's probably why he's out there.
Why he's there.
Right. So he made a comment, and I'm going to have to punt on white privilege here, or you can make me jump through. He said that...
Don't make it weird.
I'm trying to make it weird.
Just spit it out.
So Tim Ryan said that the combination of Lamar Jackson's dark uniform, dark football, and dark skin makes his hiding the ball that much tougher for defenses to pick up and makes him that much more effective. Something to that effect.
It's just ridiculous.
The dark ball and the dark uniform, maybe. His hands are not hiding a football because of their color. By the way, so in terms of play action passing, which is a bit different than run pass option, but the same concept of what am I doing with the ball? Who was the best play action pass quarterback you watched growing up? One guy stands out in my mind.
Well, there's two. For me, I guess modern era to a degree, Peyton Manning. The other one was Boomer Esiason.
Boomer Esiason and Peyton Manning are the two whitest guys on the fucking planet.
Whitest guys on the planet. Boomer Esiason's hands were massive, right? Like, because I've physically shaken his hand. His hand is a giant bear paw. So he could
he would literally stand there with the ball behind his back, right. Like, hey, I gave it to him. No need to look over right. here.
Well, and he did that, and I mean, because he could palm the ball, and just barely put it behind him,
right?
And
just stand there like nothing's right. going on.
So he would, you know, they call it the Statue of Liberty, just kind of like stand there, and defenders are like, oh, well, you don't have the ball, let me go find it,
right?
And then with Peyton Manning, like he just had it so. Like, they just had such a crazy rhythm that you just assumed that the ball was going to Edgerrin James or, you know, like, whatever the running backs that came after him. And then...
Marvin Harrison would turn around
and throw it to Marvin Harrison or the kid out of Miami, so Reggie Wayne. So, I think it was a dumb comment. I would have suspended him just for the fact that it was just such a dumb comment. I mean, am I going to fire...
You're not a racist. You're just really stupid.
Right. Like, you're not a racist. You're just a fucking idiot. Like, so sit down for a week and think about it. Then come back and then don't be an idiot. Like, that's literally how I would handle it.
Yeah. I don't think there's any malice in it. I do think the comment was really dumb.
Right. Like, I mean, it's just, you got a guy who's not super bright, who's trying to be a smart analyst. And it's like, stay in your lane, bro.
So I watched Marcellus Wiley, LeVar Arrington, and I don't remember who the third commentator was, talk about it. And LeVar Arrington thought that Tim Ryan thought it was his mic drop moment. Like, I'm going to make this incredible announcement that the reason this works is, boom, he's dark, the ball's dark, look, no one can see it. And Marcellus Wiley actually cut him off, or didn't cut him off, but responded and said, I don't think he thought it was a mic drop. I think he thought he was making a legitimate point. He made it very badly. It's ultimately a dumb point. But there was no malice behind it.
I don't think it's because Tim Ryan's a racist. I just think it's because he's a fucking idiot. Right? I mean, which also, like, first of all, could you imagine Tim Ryan sitting at that table with
LeVar Arrington
and Marcellus Wiley? Like,
here's what I meant, guys.
Right. Here's, like, shut the fuck up.
and their basic thing was, shut the fuck up, but no, this isn't.
Right. Like, I wouldn't fire Stephen Miller.
No.
I mean, I would definitely sit him down just because it's just so ridiculous, but I wouldn't fire him.
All right. So there's another 2018 quarterback who relies on his legs to run, has been doing pretty well lately. That would be Josh Allen of my Buffalo Bills, who plays against Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens this week. We got to wrap it up. We're over an hour now.
Like, you this is big. You need this.
If they can win this game, they can actually make a swing at New England for the conference or division title. And a win essentially guarantees the Bills a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Having said that, they also have no excuses. They've got a long rest. They played on Thanksgiving.
Yep.
So they got a longer rest. They're very healthy. They've got a couple guys were out with, you know, illness, and one guy who's out with an ankle injury who's been replaced at the right tackle by a rookie, Cody Ford, who's been playing great ball. So no real injury issues, longer time, and it's in Buffalo. If you're going to do it, this is the time to do it. No excuses. I'm picking the Bills 27-24, pure homerism, won't even deny it. What are your thoughts on the game?
Watching Baltimore right now, they're just clicking on all cylinders. Like, San Francisco's the best defense, you know, arguably the best defense in the league.
Right.
And they were, like, the conditions were shitty and they were still able to handle them. You know, I don't know who, I think I take Jimmy Garoppolo over Josh Allen.
Oh, geez, yes.
Right? Like, I mean, like, so.
Josh Allen's a better athlete and can do things with his feet unlike Jimmy Garoppolo.
I don't know if the conditions are going to be conducive to that. Like, I mean, I know you're expecting
snow. Supposed to be windy.
But
precipitation is not supposed to play a factor.
Oh, okay. I mean, so if it's just going to be windy, I mean, I think this, again, this lines up for Baltimore to win this game, because the issue is Josh Allen is playing pretty good, but he's not playing great. And I think against that defense, like, you need to play really good, because I don't know Baltimore's defense. Like, I, like, your run defense isn't good enough to stop Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram, right?
We'll
see. I mean, to really contain them both. Now, listen, you did a pretty good job against Zeke Elliott on Thanksgiving Day, but I also think that Dallas is not using Zeke Elliott the way that they should, and I have him as a fantasy player, so I pay very close attention.
I'm sure.
But that being said, like, I mean, trying to stop both of those guys, two guys running in the backfield at any given time, is really difficult, and I'm not sure that the Buffalo Bills have the speed to contain Lamar Jackson, as no one really has.
I'm not sure anyone does.
Other than the Browns, right? Like, they were, like, but, the, I mean, that was early in the season before the Browns fell apart, so... The reality is, I think that it's probably going to be too much Lamar Jackson and too much Mark Ingram.
I mean, Buffalo's 9-3 playing at home, and I believe they're a 6-point underdog. I could be wrong about that, but they are an underdog
they're
at home.
They're an underdog. I mean,
the last and they're 9-3.
Right, and so
I get it.
Right,
I mean,
and against Dallas, I was curious about it because I thought that Dallas, like, the. If Dallas plays that game right, they technically should have run it, right? Like, I mean, Zeke should be the focal point of the Dallas offense, but their offensive coordinator, what's his name, the former quarterback from Boise State, refuses to make Zeke the focal point. So that's where Dallas is falling short. We saw it again last night against Chicago.
Right, right.
But in Baltimore, there are no qualms. Like, their whole thing is run it with Mark Ingram, let Lamar do his thing with his legs, and, oh, by the way, Lamar can now throw an accurate ball into tight windows. And that's a difficult thing for any defense to stop. So,
I'm not saying... The only other thing I think Buffalo has going for it is Baltimore is on an 8-game winning streak. And in the NFL, you typically have a stinker at some point. And I'm counting on that happening then.
Right, and it could. And listen, if you win that, then, you know, you guys are definitely locked up in the playoffs. And I think your bet with me is pretty safe. But if you lose that...
It gets interesting.
Because then the next week you play the Steelers, and then you also have to play the Patriots again... So
in New England.
Right, in New England. So, I mean, all of a sudden, then...
No, it trust me. I'm well aware of all
Steelers
these things.
Steelers got Arizona this week at Arizona. So, if the Steelers win this week and, you know, then they turn around and beat you, then all of a sudden our bet is...
Very much up in the air.
Very, very much up in the air. And, I mean...
The difference is we have the Jets to close the season. I don't know who you have.
Well, we've got Arizona, we've got Buffalo, we've got the Jets, and then we got Baltimore.
Ooh. So we could be talking about Lamar Jackson to close the season too, who might not be in the game because he might have division number one locked up.
We might be facing RG3.
You might. All right, we should wrap this up. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Please tweet at us. Steve does most of the heavy lifting there. We are jim@whiskeycongress.com to email me, steve@whiskeycongress.com to email him. Thank you for listening. Good talking to you, man.
Yep.
And we are out of here.
All right.